Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, we're going to start off this morning with some audience participation. So I want everybody to take out a piece of paper, your bulletin, or whatever you got, grab a pencil and a pen, or a pen. Everybody got it? Good? Got something? I want you to sign your name on that paper. Everybody sign your name on that paper. I would just sign your name. Good? Everyone good? Now I want you to switch the hand you're writing with and sign your name with the non-dominant hand. Go ahead and do that. Yeah, everybody chuckles. Yeah. Can't even read it, right? Let's do it. It's a little more challenging, isn't it? And a little bit more, I did this in my office, and I'm like, man, I can't even write. I'm like, I'm trying to draw like lines and like, you know, real meticulous because I can't do it. Am I right? I'm just dribble right out. It's a little more challenging. It doesn't feel natural to write with your opposite hand, does it? It doesn't feel natural. Here's the thing. Just as each of us has a natural bent toward writing with the right or left hand, God has given us all different personalities, right? And here's the thing. Your personality determines in large part how you interact with other people. And that can have a positive or negative effect on your relationships. There was a speaker at a women's club that was speaking about marriage. And the speaker asked the audience this question. Ladies, how many of you want to mother your husbands? There was a pause. And then a lady in the back raised her hand. And the speaker said, you want to mother your husband? Mother, the women echoed. I thought you said smother. All the ladies are like, yes, definitely, right? Sign me up for that. Hey, personalities aren't right or wrong. Just different for different individuals, right? Think about the relationships in your life. None of us dream of having shallow relationships, do we? But the reality in our busy world is that relationships that go deep are often hard to come by. And not all relationships are the same, would you agree? I mean, your relationship with a waitress at Applebee's is different from your relationship with a coworker, which is unique from a lifelong friend, which is different from a dating relationship, which is different from a marriage. All types of relationships can be authentic. They all have the potential to impact and change you, and they all take work in order to grow. Over the next several weeks, we're going to dive in and talk about four aspects that are vital to every relationship: personality, communication, conflict, and adaptability. And today we're going to start off by talking about personality because it impacts every aspect of our relationships. From communication to conflict and from money management to time management, how God designed you deep in the DNA of your personality is the perfect place to start when it comes to a series on loving relationships. Why? Because the more you understand how God made you, and the more you understand how God made other people, the easier it is to go beneath the surface and truly give and receive love. You see, by taking a deep look at your inner hardwiring for love, you open the door to understand with another person. This is actually called empathy, right? The capacity to see the world from each other's perspective. This is huge in a relationship. Empathy is huge in a relationship. A show of hands. If you have ever had a fight within a relationship and either you uttered or the person you were fighting with uttered the words, if you could only see it from my perspective, right? Anybody? Yeah, right. Why does this matter? Why is this important? Because empathy is at the heart of love. It's what allows us to walk in each other's shoes without stepping on each other's toes. Empathy is what allows us to, as stated in Galatians 6:2, carry each other's burdens, right? And in Romans 12:15, rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Empathy helps us as we attempt to fulfill the command found in 1 Peter 4:8, above all, love each other deeply. When we think about or talk about personality traits, we often think about things that are different from one personality to another, right? What are the differences? But we're going to start today by looking at some of the things that are true of personalities as a whole. When we understand these basics about personalities, we can better understand ourselves and others. So things that are true about personalities. And the first one is personalities can be seen. Personalities can be seen. Now, obviously, we can't x-ray personality, right? But we can observe it, right? We can observe it. Why? Because our personality is evident in our behaviors. Just observe someone for a period of time, and you can begin to pick up on what their personality is like. Our behaviors reveal our personalities, and those who have been around us enough know when our behaviors aren't matching up with our true personality. There was a man who was at work when he decided he would show his wife how much he loved her. And so he shaved and put on some nice cologne and bought her a bouquet of beautiful flowers. And he arrived home and knocked on the front door. And his wife answered the door and exclaimed, "Oh no, this has been a terrible day. First I had to take Billy to the emergency room to get stitches in his leg. Then your mother called and said she's coming for 2 weeks. Then the washing machine broke, and now this. You come home drunk." Personalities can be seen. So guys, you may want to bring flowers home to your wife or whatnot a little more often so she don't think you come home drunk, right? Hey, number two, personalities are God-given. Personalities are God-given. You can't choose your personality like you choose your clothes, right? Relatively speaking, you have just one personality for life. It is something you are born with. Sure, you can modify portions of it, right? Your personality, you can modify portions of it, but by and large, your personality represents your natural traits and or tendencies. I know when me and my wife go out to dinner, she's going to order the same thing pretty much every time because that's just her personality. She knows what she likes, and she wants to order what she likes. That's just her who she is. And when she does do something different, I'm like, whoa, hold on. Who kidnapped my wife, right? I noticed this even working at the Pizza Barn, right? We just saw somebody at Arby's. I hadn't seen him for a long time. They used to come every Friday nights. The guy worked up at Chase Brass would come in, and every Friday nights after he got off work, his wife would meet him up at the Pizza Barn, and they always ordered a 12-inch taco pizza, and they would eat that, and then he would get a double dip of butter pecan ice cream. So we were at Arby's the other night, and I hadn't seen these people in forever because he went to first shifts, and so they don't come in often anymore when I was working up there. And so I was like, I think they maybe recognized who I was, and I kind of said hi. I was like, hey, I used to work at the Pizza Barn. My brother-in-law, you know, my wife's parents own it, and we were so, yeah. And I was like, yeah, we miss seeing you guys. You know, you used to come in and order a 12-inch taco pizza, and they kind of looked at me like a little weird. And I was like, oh, yeah, and you used to always get a double dip of butter pecan ice cream. He's like, yeah, forgot all about that. Crazy thing was, this was a Friday. The next day, we went up to Costco in Fort Wayne, saw him at Costco. They probably freaked out. Like, this guy's following us. He wants us to buy ice cream and taco pizza again or something. Freaked him out. But it's just something you're born with. I mean, those people ordered that stuff all the time. We had people order the same thing at the Pizza Barn all the time. They would literally call and I'd take their order and they would order something different and say, whoa, hold on. That's not double pepperoni. They're like, yeah, I know, we're ordering something different. But it's just who you're born with. But you can modify portions of your personality, but by and large, your personality represents natural traits or tendencies. They are God-given, and as the psalmist David said, you are fearfully and wonderfully made in Psalm 139:14. Hey, number three. So personalities are can be seen. Personalities are God-given. Number three, personalities are predictable. Personalities are predictable. I knew you were going to say that, right? Anybody ever said that? I knew you were going to say that. How many times have you or your spouse or best friend uttered those words to one another? I knew you were going to say that. Married couples are famous for this, as are good friends, roommates, and siblings. When you know someone well, you can expect certain reactions and behaviors from that person. You know how they're going to react. Yeah? Right? Why? Because personalities are fundamentally predictable. Now, our personalities do make room for a bit of the unpredictability, or to be unpredictable, and that's not bad. Changing things up on occasion can get us out of boring ruts, but for the most part, you can take comfort in knowing that personalities remain pretty consistent. Number four, personalities have strong points and weak points. For you to be at your best, you need to have your personality needs satisfied, right? For example, your personality may crave a detailed plan with time to think things through, whether it be for a major project at work or for an evening out on the town. A thoughtful plan makes you a happy camper. But if something or someone, including your spouse, stands in the way of having the time to craft a detailed plan for something you care about, you inevitably feel off kilter. You'll worry, and as your anxiety increases, you get irritable, right? Even worse, you may become overly passive, clamming up when asked for your input. You like detail. I want a detailed plan. Or perhaps your personality craves quick results. You're decisive. At work, you make decisions quickly, with confidence. You trust your instincts. You shoot from the hip. You certainly don't waste time on small talk, right? But the moment someone starts dragging you down by asking too many questions, or if a system impedes your progress with too much red tape, you're bound to get more forceful, maybe even boisterous and demanding. You get the point. When it comes to personalities, our greatest strengths can become our greatest weaknesses. The good news is that in Romans 8:26, it says the Spirit helps us in our weakness. Think of it this way. Your personality represents what is important and highly desirable for you. Meeting this desire is what your personality is consumed with. You are programmed for getting this need met, and when you don't get this need met, your worst side comes out. Number five is, personalities can be improved. Personalities can be improved. French philosopher, author, and journalist Albert Camus said, "We continue to shape our personality all our life. We continue to shape our personality all our life. While the basic hardwiring for our temperament is relatively non-negotiable, we can choose which aspects of our personality to highlight or moderate." Follow me? For example, if you know you tend to be rather opinionated and uninhibited, you can learn to control these tendencies when you need to. Or maybe you are more subdued and matter-of-fact, therefore you get in trouble for never showing your emotions. You can learn to counter this a bit when it might be helpful. Blaming anything on your personality is not an acceptable excuse. Romans 12:12 says that we can be transformed by the renewing of our minds. You are in the driver's seat of your demeanor. It all begins when you become more aware of your personality. So now that we've established some basics about personalities, let's talk a little bit about individual personalities. We're going to take a look at two different scales. These are obviously not the only factors in personalities, but looking at these two and how they interact gives a basic for understanding the differences in personalities. And so we're going to look at these two scales by asking two questions. And the first question is, are you project-oriented or people-oriented? Are you project-oriented or people-oriented? Anybody ever heard of the clothing line Nordstrom? Anybody? Just one? I'm the only one. Okay, we got one. One other one. All right, good. The two of us, we've heard of it. It's a clothing corporation. And at the head department store in Seattle, Washington, the headquarters for it. You'll find a sign hanging in different places. It says, the only difference between stores is the way they treat their customers. The only difference in between stores is the way they treat their customers. You see, most stores advertise the quality of their merchandise or the wide selection of their goods. But not Nordstrom. The difference between Nordstrom and most other stores is that other stores are project-oriented and Nordstrom is people-oriented. Their employees are trained to respond quickly and kindly to customers, and because of this, some say that Nordstrom doesn't have customers, it has fans. Sounds to me a lot like Chick-fil-A. Anybody ever had Chick-fil-A? Yeah, there we go. There we go. It's all about customer service. When you say thank you at Chick-fil-A, what do they say? Do they say you're welcome? What do they say? My pleasure. Yeah, thank you, my pleasure. Oh, wow, really? Well, why don't you do something else for me then? Right? Love Chick-fil-A. Now, within those organizations, they do have people who focus on the bottom line more than customers. These employees don't interface much with the customers. Their job is to focus on product quality and inventory, or in Chick-fil-A's case, cook the food, right? Cook me the food. In retail, these people are looking at displays, lighting, traffic flow, what product is moving and what product isn't moving so well. They are logistic people. And here's the truth. These companies could not survive without both groups. They have to have both groups. No effective organization can. And like these organizations, our world needs both people-oriented and project-oriented individuals. The question for you is, which camp do you fall into? One is not better than the other, they're just different. Which comes more naturally to you? Are you more energized by checking tasks off your to-do list or by setting aside a project to connect with other people? If you say you are more project-oriented, then you prize getting things done. You love an assignment. You probably live by a to-do list. Getting a job done, whether big or small, can take priority over other considerations, including people's feelings. In fact, anything that stands in your way of getting the task accomplished will likely feel like a distraction. You like concrete objectives. You like to measure your progress. Plainly put, you like to be productive. Kara's motto in our house is, why put off tomorrow what we can get done today? My motto, on the other hand, is why do today what we can put on off till tomorrow or the next day, right? On the other hand, if you say you are people-oriented, you generally value the emotional well-being of others over productivity. You're good at working with people and you're friendly. Hard to be a people person and not be friendly, right? I mean, that's just a given. You get a feeling for people early on in conversations and seems to know just what to say. You're rarely forceful or overbearing. You're flexible and you adapt easily to other people's situations and attitudes. You're diplomatic. You prize consensus and harmony. You're a team player. Nobody would describe you as a loner. In short, you're a people person. So are you hardwired primarily for projects or for people? Like I said, one is not better than the other. And the fact is, you may have qualities from both sides. In fact, chances are you may be somewhere in the middle, but if you had to choose a side, which one do you lean into the most? Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42 is a good example of personality differences. Let me read it for us this morning. Luke chapter 10, 38 through 42, it says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had been made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, it seems as though Jesus is saying it's better to be people-oriented like Mary rather than project-oriented like Martha. However, the point Jesus was making was not about which personality was better. He was saying that no matter your personality, it is better to be focused on spending time with Jesus rather than distracted and worried about the task of serving him. Martha lost her focus, on the joy of serving Jesus. So while we explore and celebrate the differences in our personalities, it's important to remember that we all need time with Jesus as well as time serving him. It's also important that we remember that we can't make others fit our mold, right? There is not one right or holy personality in ministry, marriage, friendship, or parenting. Recognizing and honoring the differences is important. The next question, question number two. So question number one, are you project-oriented or people-oriented? Question number two, are you fast-paced or slow-paced? Are you fast-paced or slow-paced? One of Aesop's most famous fables. Anybody know what one of Aesop's most famous fables is? Tortoise and the Hare. Good job. Was that you, Tony? Good job, Tony. See me later. I'll give you a candy bar. Yeah, now everybody's going to start answering questions, aren't you? Tortoise and the Hare. One day a hare saw a tortoise walking slowly along and began to laugh and mock him, right? I would be the tortoise in this story. The hare challenged the tortoise to a race, and the tortoise accepted. They agreed on a route and started the race. The hare shot ahead and ran briskly for some time. Then seeing that he was far ahead of the tortoise, he thought he'd sit under a tree and relax before continuing the race. Corey, this kind of sounds a lot like our little 5K that we did against the ladies, right? Then, seeing that he was far ahead, the tortoise thought he'd sit under a tree and relax before continuing the race. Under the tree, the hare soon fell asleep. When the hare awoke, however, he found that his competitor, crawling slowly but steadily, had already won the race. The moral of the story? Well, it depends on who you would identify with the most, right? If it's the tortoise, you'll say, slow and steady wins the race, right? But if it's the hare, you'll counter, hey, you snooze, you lose, right? So which one are you, the tortoise or the hare? Do you approach your day like a marathon, slow and steady? Or do you jump into your day like it's a sprint to the finish? If you say you are more fast-paced, then you probably live your life with a certain level of urgency. You like to get things done, like yesterday, right? You don't want to waste time. You're ready to get going. You want to use your time wisely. You often measure success in life and even relationships by speed. When you come home from the grocery store with 10 bags to bring into the kitchen from your car, how many trips does it take you? One, right. Good job. One. Suffering a bit of temporary pain in an effort to avoid a second trip. That's me. It's all about efficiency and speed. You're a fast-paced person. Jesus' disciple Peter may have been naturally a fast-paced person, right? Remember the story of Peter's stories throughout the Bible. He was the only one to step out of the boat when he saw Jesus walking on water. He was the first to declare Jesus was the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And on Pentecost, when the Holy Spirit descended upon the disciples, it was Peter who immediately stood up to preach the good news of Jesus Christ to the thousands of people who had gathered in Jerusalem. Maybe you find yourself more slow-paced. You take your time. You don't overschedule, right? If you don't get something done today, I'll get it done tomorrow, or the next day, or the next day, or maybe next year, right? So why rush? Why rush? Why let the clock run your life? So take your time. You're just a slow-paced person. Patience is a virtue. And Paul in Galatians 5 notes that patience is among the fruit of the Spirit. But don't mistake patience with being slow-paced. Why? Because patience involves waiting without complaint. My wife would say, I am not a patient person. She'll take me she doesn't want to take me shopping anymore, because what do I do the whole time? I complain. Like, why are we doing this? You go into the store and look at every shirt in the store. Just go in and pick one and let's go. You know, I'm going out and sitting somewhere. I don't know. I'm not a patient person. I don't wait without complaining. And you can be a slow-paced person who is actually impatient and even complains. Whether you are a fast-paced person or a slow-paced person, both personalities have to learn patience. So what about you? How are you hardwired? Are you a fast-paced person or a slow-paced person? And again, you might be somewhere in the middle, but if you had to choose a side, which one describes you the best? Of course, this is just scratching the surface of understanding our personalities. There's far more to how God made your personality than whether you are simply fast-paced or slow-paced, or project-oriented versus people-oriented. But I use these examples today to help us understand ourselves and others. When we look at our personality differences, when we look at each other and our personality differences with understanding, we open the door to empathy, to love, and to deeper relationships. Albert Schweitzer was a musician and a physician who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1952. This is the message he left when he died. I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I do know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who have sought and found how to serve. That's what the message for today is as we wrap up. 1 Peter 3:8 encourages us to be tender-hearted and keep a humble attitude. And 1 Peter 4:10 says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others. The more we understand each other's God-given gifts, the easier it is to love each other with the kind of love we all need the most, the deep and abiding love shown to us in Jesus Christ.